About 7 o'clock in the morning, I hear him go, ugh. I'm like, hey, you all right? I look over, I pull my sheet, I look over. He's laying on his side, sweating, foam coming out his mouth. I'm like, oh crap, what do I do? And I'm gonna say something that you shouldn't think, but I thought it for a split second. I was like, man, I can't deal with this. I ought to just go to the gym and whatever happens, happens, his fault. But one thing that we do have in the military, we have a brotherhood. So if that means I have to take on some of your stuff, some of your baggage, I just got to take it on because I can't see you go down. So if we're in a foxhole, you got to know that I can trust you. And this is our foxhole right now.
Welcome to Your Story Doesn't End Here, the mental health podcast of military and veterans who refuse to be silenced. I'm your host, Rachel, and my mission with this podcast is to be a voice for those who don't have a voice, bring awareness to mental health issues, provide value and solutions, and to change the culture when it comes to mental health within the DoD organizations. Hey, everyone, and thank you so much for coming back for another episode of Your Story Doesn't End Here. Today, our guest is Patrick. He is a 20-year military vet, was an Air Force photographer. When he retired, he got into coaching and won a state basketball championship and Coach of the Year. He is the founder of This Is My Moment, a movement in celebration and clapping for any level of success. Patrick, thank you so much for being on the show today.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you and I were talking before the episode started. I'm so excited to hear your story. It sounds like there's so many amazing, incredible parts to it. So I'm going to pass it off to you so you can share with the audience.
Well, here's the deal. It's a lot. It's a lot going on inside of this thing here, right? But I know this is a military health podcast, and I'm that guy too. So what I want to talk about is for 20 years, I was stationed everywhere from the States, Montana, North Dakota, over to Germany, Japan, and deployed almost 6 or 7 times, Afghanistan, Iraq, Bagram, Kandahar, everywhere you want to go, Israel, Southern Florida. And what people don't talk about is the mental health aspect of being a veteran. So thank you for having me, and let's get it cracking.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, you mentioned to me that you're obviously mentioning it now as well. You mentioned to me earlier that you had some PTSD from your service. And I think that's very relatable to a lot of veterans. I think a lot of us do have PTSD in some aspect, some war related, some not war related. And, and I think that's important to talk about. And so, but you also mentioned that you had some stuff from your childhood too, that I think a lot of people bring in their own traumas into their service in the military. So if you wouldn't mind touching on what life was like for you growing up, and then, you know, how that translated into what you experienced in the military, if it translated in some way, and what, if you know, caused that PTSD that you experienced.
I know exactly what caused the PTSD. I was there, but like for me growing up, I'm originally from Houston, and we grew up extremely poor, right? My mom, she worked 2 jobs. It was 3 of us, me, my brother, and sister. And we lived in the ghetto. It was the hood. And she worked and she saved the money and she got us up out of there. It was just an unsafe place. And we didn't have a car. So in order for us to move, she packed all our stuff in a shopping cart, right? And she pushed it, and we pushed it in front of all our so-called friends, right? And people used to laugh at us, but we were still moving up. We just had to do it the best way we could. And I think that's what I really took into the military, is just being myself. And it's funny because it took me years of being in the military to realize who I was, right? Because you go from being poor, no money, to getting a check every 2 weeks. No matter how big or small that check was, every 2 weeks you was getting it, right? So you kind of lose yourself because you can buy those things and you can go to these places, right? And you can eat this food that you never had before. So you kind of lose yourself. But as the years progressed and I got married, I started having kids, right? And I realized that who I was as a kid was not a bad thing. It was just me. And when I did that, I realized that I was happy as a person. So taking that into my deployments, I realized, you know what? I'm here to do my job, do the best I can, and get it out of there. Kandahar, 2009, Afghanistan. I was on a resupply mission, and we got hit with IEDs. We getting shot at, and it was probably the worst 10 months of my entire life. My roommate attempted suicide while I was in the room. So when I came back from a 10-month stint, I had PTSD, anxiety and depression diagnosed. The funny part is, and people don't talk about this, I am married, but we were both in the service. So we were meal to meal. My deployment was supposed to end January 3rd, 2010. I did not get back to January 23rd because of delays and the suicide attempt, and I missed my wife's deployment by 5 days. So from June of 09 to June of 10, the worst time of my life, I did not have a support system. Horrible.
So, you know, one thing I want to touch on, first of all, is it's interesting when I talk to people about their military experience compared to how they grew up, there's a different level of gratitude for people in the military who came from very little. And it's something that I want to put into perspective. And I want everyone listening to this podcast episode to really think about this, because this is where that gratitude and perspective comes into play, because our experience in this life is always based on our perspective. So there's people that I talk to that they join the military and they're like, man, I'm so grateful for a roof over my head and for a steady paycheck and just to have something, to have a steady job, to have the benefits. But then there's people like myself, when I first joined the military, I didn't want to join as an E1 because I was like, man, that paycheck is crap. You know, it's nothing. And, you know, I had worked my way up to having a place of my own before the military. And so my perspective was different. But one thing that I reflect on a lot, and I've reflected on this post my military service, is how many beautiful moments I missed out on in the military just for not being grateful in that moment and not fully embracing, you know, they talk about embracing the suck in the military, but not fully embracing that moment. And, you know, the places that I visited that were incredibly beautiful, and I was so in my head that I wasn't embracing that. So I wanted to touch on that really quick because I think it's incredible hearing that perspective. There is a motivational speaker. I can't remember his name off the top of my head right now. I follow him on Instagram. And in his story, talks a lot about how he grew up with a mom who was addicted to drugs and his perspective on it. Like, you would think he was living the best life ever. And so you talk about pushing around a shopping cart to move, and to you, that's moving up. There's so many people in the world who would see that as like, oh, pushing around a shopping cart, that's like the lowest of the low. So it's really cool that you have that perspective on that, because a lot of people don't. And so I wanted to acknowledge that first off. The other thing that I wanted to talk about is you said that your roommate committed or tried to commit suicide when you were in the room. And this is something that is not talked about a lot, is the people that are that the people that are affected by the aftermath and the people that are these first responders and the people that are in the scene when these things are happening. And suicides happen way, 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 way more often than is talked about in the military. And the attempts, I don't even think we have an accurate number on the attempts of suicides in the military, because I know for a fact they're not all recorded. And so I want to talk a little bit about what that experience was like for you.
Man, it was crazy. So here's the thing. So just like I said, when November 11th, 2009, that's when I got blew up and I messed my back up and I was in a bad place. January 1st is when he attempted. It's only, what, a month and some change. So I wasn't 100% healed. And I can remember, man, actually, just like it was yesterday. And that's the hard part is it stays here. And that's the part that a lot of people don't understand, right? This here, it doesn't shut off. So I can see it. So I'm going to tell you how it went down. December 31st, I'm laying in my cot, right? We're in Afghanistan, so we have a cot. And I'm in the room, it's me and this other guy. I have my curtain pulled, right? So I give my own little privacy. And I'm talking to my wife, and I'm like, babe, January 1st, we're going to do something real big. We're going to do something different when I get home, right? It's New Year's. Let's make a pact, right? And I said, you know what? I don't want to do lose weight. I don't want to do that. I want to do something we've never done before. Right? And I hang up. And the guy's like, hey, Mitch, that's what they call me. Hey, Mitch, I need to use the room. I want to talk to my wife. I says, you know what? You got it, man. It's New Year's. I got it. So I go to the gym, right? So I'm working out, whatever. I come back, it's about 2 in the morning, 02, and he's asleep. I jump in my car, I go to sleep. About 7 o'clock in the morning, I hear him go, ugh. I'm like, hey, you all right? I look over, I pull my sheet, I look over. He's laying on his side, sweating, foam coming out his mouth. I'm like, oh crap, what do I do? And I'm gonna say something that's you shouldn't think, but I thought it for a split second. I was like, man, I can't deal with this. I ought to just go to the gym and whatever happens, happens, his fault. But one thing that we do have in the military, we have a brotherhood. So if that means I have to take on some of your stuff, some of your baggage, I just got to take it on because I can't see you go down. So if we're in a foxhole, you got to know that I can trust you. And this is our foxhole right now. So I jump over on this side of the bed, right? And you know, they teach you these combat lifesaver skills, right? When people are choking or they're bleeding, right? They teach you these saving skills, right? So I turn him over and I'm patting him on his back. And I'm like, hey, man, you can't do this. Like, you got to do something better. So he's gargling right in his real water. And I'm beating on the wall. Hey, help, help. And you got to understand, Afghanistan, 7 o'clock in the morning, all the army, they already ready. So if we're getting ready to go home, so ain't nobody in the barracks except us. So I'm injured, he's choking, and I'm panicking. But so I pat him up, all this stuff is coming out of his mouth, right? And his airway clears, so you can hear him breathe easier. And I tell him, I said, hey man, you gotta hang on. I gotta get help. So I lay him on the side or against the wall so his tongue is hanging out and all this stuff is able to drain. And coming off an injury, IED, I ran 150 yards to the med tent to get help. So they come in, right? They bring the little wagon. It ain't no ambulance, it's a little wagon, and they driving up, right? And they put him in the back and they take him to Kandahar. So he's at Kandahar. I get in the Humvee, I go follow him, right? And this is where it gets really crazy. Follow me on this. They get him in there and they pump his stomach, right? They put that charcoal down and all this stuff comes up, right? And I'm in there, I'm like, oh man, what is this? And he tells him, he said, hey, Sarge, I need you to get my book. I say, what? I say, man, I ain't worried about no book. He's like, Sarge, I need my book. So I'm like, all right. So I go back to the tent, right? I go back to the barracks. And it's a bottle of Ambien and a bottle of antidepressant pills because we made a pact to stop smoking before we came back home. So they give you these pills to help you. So the bottles are empty. I find the book. I raffle through the very last page of this book is a suicide note. He did not want to go home because he was going through family issues. He would have rather died in a war instead of went home and faced himself, right? So I get this book and I head back over there to Kandahar and I tell him, I say, hey man, I can't give you the book. I got to give it to the doctor. He's like, man, I need the book. You can't do this. I said, man, I know I can't, but I got to. So being a friend and taking on this baggage is not just being there for the good stuff. It's also being there for that help part. And sometimes that help is hard. And that was 2009. This is 23, and I can still see it.
Do you know what happened with him?
He actually promoted, because what they did do, I think they took a better look at it now. Like these years, they've been actually trying to help. So he was actually able to promote and retire. So they didn't use his attempt as a hindrance for his, you know what I mean, for his military career. He may not have been able to go as far as he wanted, but he was still able to complete what he started, even if it was just half of anything he wanted. But for the simple fact that the government and the military and the Air Force gave this young man the ability to finish, even though he had one misstep, I think is a phenomenal thing. But for Patrick, I'm living with this, like, man. Like, goodness gracious, like this, you don't want to do this. You don't want this on you. You see what I'm saying? So people look at the suicide as a bad thing, and it is. The suicide attempt is a bad thing, and it is. But you know what's also horrible? The people that has to live with sin, the people that has to live with being without you, the people that had to go out of their way and make that split second decision between them or you, they have to live with that stuff. You know what I mean? And it's not easy. And I came back, man, and I'm diagnosed anxiety and depression, PTSD, short-term memory loss. It's a bad day.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'd have did the same thing because I don't want to see him go.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
that is.
Yeah. I wish more people would talk about that because there is that whole other layer to any suicide or suicide attempt, as that there's so many people that are affected in the process, and it really does affect the performance of the unit as a whole when we know someone is hurting like that. So I appreciate you sharing that in-depth story. I think it puts into perspective what it's really like from that first responder standpoint. So thank you so much for sharing that. You were a photographer in the Air Force, correct? So what kind of things did you see as a photographer?
Man, so I did a lot. I've seen actual suicides. I've seen dead bodies. I've done deployments in Israel, Tel Aviv, South Florida. Man, it was Dubai, Abu Dhabi. Like, I've seen all things, and everything wasn't good. I've seen some really phenomenal places, but I've also seen people with holes. I've also seen 13, 14, 12-year-old kids standing on top of mud huts with AK-47s. I've seen so many different things to where it kind of it may sound funny, but I'm proud to be an American. I'm proud to be in the military because I've seen so many different things, and no matter what people say about where we are, like, man, people got it way worse. Way worse. And being a photographer, it's the only job where you can be anything for a day. Man, I was a general one day, right? I'm walking around with the general. I was able to shoot presidents. I was able to shoot the E1s that was working in the chow hall, right? So everything that I wanted to be in the service, I was for at least one day. And that's what made like being a photographer so cool. And then like who I am as a person, I'm really down to earth. I don't judge. I don't care enough to judge because I don't want you to judge me. So if you're an E1 or if you're an 06, 07, like it didn't matter. Everybody was treated with respect and the same and given that same courtesy because I know at the end of the day, we're all just people. So that's how I rock.
I love that. I was going to ask you, how did that affect you as a person? But you answered that question for me so beautifully. I hear from a lot of combat vets and vets that have been to war and seen what life could be like. Those are the people that I speak to that are so incredibly proud to be an American because they have seen the other side. You're not the first person that's told me that, how crazy things can get in other parts of the world, and it really does put into perspective. I've never personally seen it. I've never been in that scenario where I'm getting shot at, but man, the visuals in my head, just imagining what it would be like in that scenario, I could definitely see how the combat vets like yourself would be like, we have it incredibly great over here. There's so much to be grateful for.
I'm gonna tell you one quick. So we're in Afghanistan, right? And I'm with the army at this time. So I was 10 months in with the army, and we're on this Apache helicopter, right? And I'm leaning out the window taking photos right as this helicopter. We're flying, right? And I'm just, and all of a sudden you hear pink, 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 pink. I'm like, wait a minute. I says, like, hey man, what is that? They're like, dude, don't take no more pictures. They shooting. I said, what? Like, so they was like, dude, sit down, buckle in, because they're shooting small arms. I'm like, you gotta be, dude. Like, I was literally hanging out the window taking these pictures for reconnaissance stuff, right? And all of a sudden, like, we're getting shot at. I'm like, man, this is
Wow.
this is
Wow.
like, dude, I'm a little country, a little ghetto, man. This is too much for me, brother.
Oh,
Goodness.
man.
And I mean, and this was 10 months of this stuff, and that was an Apache, right? But I'd had that happen to me in a Humvee, in an MRAP. Like I've been shot at so many times, I was just like, man, I gotta go home. I like my fingers and toes, man. And you know, and I pray for those that didn't make it, because some people didn't come home. You know what I mean? And I can remember faces, but I can't remember names. It's just how it is for me. And we can be in the gym. You know how they had a makeshift gyms, right? So we're in the gym, man, and they'll have these things called ramp ceremonies. The people that don't come home, man, and we was having them every day. Every day, cats wasn't coming home. And no matter how bad I had it, right, I always prayed and thank God that I was still, even though I'm mentally messed up, I still had my fingers, I still had my toes. Plus, I had the ability to come home and kiss my kids and my wife. See what I'm saying? My mom, my brothers and sisters. So no matter how screwed up I am, I still had it a lot better than some people, because some of them cats didn't make it. So shout out to those people, family, because that's a big deal. And Memorial Day is a big deal for me. Veterans Day is a big deal to me, because I've seen cats work out today and not be here tomorrow. So it's crazy.
Yeah, Memorial Day definitely hits different when you've
Oh, yeah.
actually when you've served, because whether it's from a combat standpoint or a losing friends to suicide standpoint, I actually morally had a really hard time with it this year, because as we see people celebrating Memorial Day and not knowing what it's really about, I had a really hard time in my brain watching people celebrate knowing I had just lost someone to suicide again a few months prior. And so you're absolutely right when you bring that up. The different service-based holidays, they do hit so differently. I want to talk about how you processed things mentally coming off of a deployment like that, or several deployments like that, and getting out of the military, because I think all of us vets kind of experience our own little decompression period. There's a lot of similarities that I hear in stories where, you know, people really struggle. I know I really struggled. I think to this day, I still really struggle with a lot of things. But talk us through how that was for you, just figuring out that different mentality after everything you had seen when you were deploying.
It wasn't a was, it's a is. Like it still is. It's not a was. Like I can't get rid of the images. I can't get rid of the past stuff, right? Here's the thing though. Like for a while when I got back, I didn't recognize myself. Like I was a totally different person. Like that upbeat, cheery, happy, passionate. I wasn't that cat. I came back, man, and I was a horrible husband. I was a horrible dad, man. I was a horrible person because I was taking on all that stuff and I wasn't trying to get help. And that's the thing that kills me, because for years I was like, oh, I don't need therapy. I don't need this. I don't need that. I don't need to talk about it. I'm a man up. I'm gonna do it. But then I realized, man, that I didn't like who I was. Like I really, like literally looked in the mirror and like, man, dude, you're a crap. Like these, I'm finna lose my kids. I'm finna lose my wife. Everything that I worked so hard for, the thing that I generally and genuinely appreciate more than myself, I'm getting ready to lose because I'm letting this get in the way of my heart. So what I did, I sucked it up and I called the VA. And I used my benefits and I started going to therapy. And I realized that for me, talking was my way through it. Actually talking, and then not just talking to people that understand. Because if I can talk to you and I don't have to use or mix my words because you understand what a deployment is, you understand what a TDY is, you know what I'm saying? You understand those little nuances. I don't have to water down my conversation. So it helped me. And then once I realized that, I actually got a job once I got back and I started coaching, because coaching is talking. Coaching was my therapy, right? So what I realized, Patrick needs more than anything else. Patrick needs therapy. Patrick needs people. And I can't be a work at home person. Like I can't telework. I've been here, I done went crazy. I need human interaction. And I learned that because that makes me the best possible version of myself, being able to talk myself through this. And that's how I make it through every single day, man. I sit there and I talk, and I talk to my kids are old now. They're 26, 24, and 22. So my parents, and I don't have to parent too much right now, right? I can just chop it up with them. And I tell them my stories, and I tell like my coworkers my story. And me and my wife, even, and I hope she don't watch this, even my wife wasn't privy to all of my things on my deployment simply because I didn't want her to worry about me. And I wasn't privy to some of the things from her deployments because it's mentally too taxing. So that's how I do it. I just talk and I own it, and I understand that I'm not above it. I just have to deal with it.
Very well said. And one thing I was reflecting on myself the other day is how, man, if there's one thing that I would have started while I was still active duty, it would have been that self-awareness and setting myself up for life on the other side of the military by preparing, i.e., being self-aware, figuring out what my next steps were. Because that self-awareness piece, I don't know if I would have fully figured it out while I was active duty because I was in a different mentality then. But I think just starting those conversations with myself early on would have been a game changer for me. And then it sounds like for you too, becoming aware of yourself and what you needed, post your time in the military and coaching was a huge thing for you. I hear from several people that just finding something, whether it be exercise, having a group of friends. A lot of veterans like to get together and do things like shoot together. I have a friend who's just recently gone into that. It's just finding that thing that works for you, and it doesn't always have to be a talk therapy. But I'm so glad that you were able to get that help and that you continue to get that help. Talk to us about the what you founded. This is my moment, and you and I talked about it a little bit prior to recording, and I love what you explained to me. So I would love if you would expound on that for the listeners.
So this is my moment, is everything that I am as a person, right? So I told you guys the story about me moving the cart, right, and pushing it in front of people and people laughing because it looked like we were really homeless, right? So I started This Is My Moment as a movement of positivity. I hate, and hate's a strong word, but I use it, but I hate how abundant negativity is in the world. I hate it. Like, I really wish more people would see the positivity that is out there, the light that is out there. So a couple of years ago, I put in for this trademark, right? I put in for this trademark, and it was called Own Your Moment. That was my trademark, Own Your Moment. I put it in, right? I sent it to these people, right? They sent me this letter back, like, no, can't use it. It's too close. It's too close to another one. I said, oh man. So me and my oldest son, we're sitting there, right, and we're chopping it up. And he says, "Dad, don't sweat it. Like you got this. This is your moment, right?" I was like, say it again." He's like, "Man," he said, "this is your moment. Like, you can't let one negative thing or one thing that didn't work out your favor take this away from you. This is your moment." I said, "Boy, you might have had some." So the very next day, me and my son, right, we chopped it up. I put in my USPTO, right, my patent, trademark paperwork. This is my moment. Came back, approved. So now This Is My Moment is registered to Patrick Mitchell. And first off, if you don't own nothing, you don't understand that you can own words. Like, coming from a cat that never owned nothing, like, owning words is a huge, huge deal for me, right? So I started this thing. I'm like, you know what? My son, he's 100. He's 100%. Let's do this. So let's start a passion for positivity. So everything that we do is genuine. When people say, oh man, you only did this, right? Like, they talking down to you. Oh, you only did this. Oh, but you know what? I did it. I did it. Why can't you be happy for me for doing it? Even if it looks different than what you would have done, I still did it, right?
Right.
And that's what This Is My Moment is. This Is My Moment claps for people, even for the smallest step. Because at the end of the day, a small step up is still forward momentum, period.
That's incredible. Are you a nonprofit or is it are you right now just
So
focusing on the movement?
actually, it's just a movement. I'm actually a motivational speaker. I do all that stuff, but my podcast is a Big Deal Life podcast. This is my mom podcast. I got a book coming out. Ridiculous. I never think that'll happen. But I'm not a nonprofit. I just have an LLC. You know what I mean? And I do the best I can with it. And I give and I donate under the LLC. And I just do the best I can. So I don't have a nonprofit. I'm just an LLC, a young cat that's growing up trying to help people with something that he owns and something that he's super passionate about. And I got t-shirts. I got a little store. I ain't making no money on it, right? But it doesn't really matter because the blessing that I receive and the positive communication that I receive is payment. So right now, man, this is my moment, is my thing. I love it and I push it. And I'm gonna say this while we're on here. Guys, if you don't know, people say nothing in life is free. Help is free. Positivity is free, period.
That's
That
so
is.
true. That's so true. I can relate so much. Your story doesn't end here, is the passion that I have in my life, right? And likewise to you, I don't make money off of it, but it's a platform to change lives and to impact
Yes.
people. And I'm on the same page as you with positivity and changing lives. That means so much more than a monetary thing. And so I am absolutely 100% behind what you're doing. I love it. How can people support you?
Man, so it's a couple of things. So I'm not a real tech guy. So everything that we do goes through my manager, right? And she has me on TikTok. I got Facebook. I got what's that, Instagram. I got all that stuff. And what I do, right? We put out content, put out positivity. We give away money. We have an organization to where a lot of people, they reply, right? You put out a message, people respond. Oh, this is great. Oh, look at this. And I'm the kind of cat that likes to talk back, right? I'm a talker. That's my joint, right? So if you reply, like I talk, I have a website, this is my moment.com, to where you can go on there and you can become a member. And I send out text, positivity text. I take phone calls from people, right? Like anything to help people get through, because I know how it feels not to have help. And it started super young. And it continued through my military to where you didn't have everything you needed. So my biggest thing to where, if you want to be the change you want to see, be the change you want to see.
That is incredible.
That
That
is.
is incredible. So, what are your social media pages? You said this is my moment across
This is my,
all handles.
yeah, yep.
Okay.
This is my moment.com. This is my moment. Instagram, this is my moment. Facebook. Man, what else? Like Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Yeah, this is my moment. TikTok, I got all that.
Yeah, I'll make sure to link that all in the show notes for anyone that wants to support. And please do go support what he's doing. It is truly incredible. And, I'm such a huge believer that the more of us that link up doing positive things in the world, we can make such an impact. Now, are
Yeah.
you focused in the Texas area? Or are you on a nationwide scale?
I do everything, man. So I've done talks all over, but I live in San Antonio. I'm a Texas cat, and my wife, she works for the government now, so Texas is our home. But with this platform and Zooms and telecommunicating, we got all this. You can go anywhere you want,
Right.
you know.
Right.
So I do it all, man. Man, it's real fun. I just want to help people. You know what I mean? So if that means I got to get on here and do a Zoom, I do a Zoom. If that means I got to pick up the phone and call somebody, I'm gonna pick up the phone. If I got to get in my car and go down the street, I'm gonna do that, because at the end of the day, at the end of the day, your legacy is not financial. Your legacy is how many people you touch that touch others. And I think that my legacy and the people that I touch should look like what I want it to look like. So if your listeners are out there, man, and you guys want to be a part of something, we doing it over here. We doing it, and we doing it with genuineness and kindness. I don't want nothing from you. That's the thing. I don't want nothing. You don't have to subscribe to my channel. I don't care. But if you need a blessing, that's what I care about. I don't want you to go to my YouTube. I got YouTube too. I don't. Yeah, you don't have to go to. You don't have to go to my YouTube and be no subscriber to get a blessing, man. Blessings are supposed to be free. That's it. And that's what we're doing over here, man. We're blessing people with positivity. And just so you guys know, we're giving away $100 for a year. And all you got to do is put your name on a sheet of paper, put it in the thing, man. You can win $100. Like, we don't want nothing. We just want to help.
Yeah, you know, I think so many people are skeptical when they hear things like that because you said the saying, not everything in life is free. So many of us were taught that, right? But I think we are in a different era in the world where people are realizing that there are ways to give back and make an impact, and people don't always expect something from you. Now, there are still people in the world that are going to expect something from you. That's just how life goes, right? But there are genuine people like yourself out there that truly just want to give back and just want to create better generations. I think for me, making sure that the generations that come after me, leaving them better than how I found them,
No question.
that's what makes the world a better place. What is your 5-year vision with what you're doing?
Man, so truthfully, I already told my wife, so I'm 46 years old. By the age of 50, I want to be done. So my 5-year vision looks like me and my wife and my dogs sitting on the beach with a margarita and a cigar, reminiscing about all the fun we had. I don't plan on working just to work. What I want to do is enjoy my summers. I want to see everything that I worked so hard for come to fruition, and I can pass it on or let it go. Because at the end of the day, I believe that I'm running out of summers, and we all are. Death is is part of the circle of life. That ain't no question. And I don't want to spend the rest of my summers working hard so I can just work harder. I want to sit back and look at everything, right? Smile at my kids, smile at my grandkids, without having to go to work, without having to do a podcast, without having to worry about clocking in on somebody else's time. I want to do that. I want to sit down with my flip-flops, with my margarita and my cigar, and chill. So that's my 5-year goal. 50-51 for Patrick is sitting up with his wife, with his dogs, looking back and thanking God for having the opportunity and being a blessing for so many people. That's my 5 years.
I love it. That
Yeah,
is the goal, right? To
it
just have this lifestyle where we're just living it up and vacationing and
is.
enjoying life. And yeah, no,
Chilling.
that's incredible. I am
Yeah.
with it. All right. So I unless you had anything else that you wanted to share, I'm just gonna wrap it up with the one last question. I told you it was coming. Is there any last words or advice that you want to leave the audience with?
So here's the deal. I'm a huge fan, and I tell my kids this, and I treat everybody like family. This is what I want to tell you. Run your race. Run your race. If you look over in another lane and you see other people, then that means you're not running your race. Stay forward, stay focused, and do the best you can and get there the best way that you can. It's your race, period.
Thank you for taking the time to listen in today. With your support, we are able to increase awareness of the mental health issues affecting service members and veterans today with the goal of creating positive change. If you got value from this episode, please take 30 seconds to subscribe and share this episode within your own network. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your mental health matters, and your story doesn't end here.